Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Erica.
Welcome to our first episode of 2023.
Whoa. I can't believe it's 2023.
I mean, thank God it's not 2022. That's all I have to say.
Or 2021 or 2020. Okay.
Exactly. I was just talking about how 2019, we didn't know how good we had it.
Oh, we were just dreamers. Young, innocent, pure. We had no idea what was coming for us.
Anyways, if this is the first time you're joining us, welcome. We're so excited that you're here. We are going to talk about the first section of The Rabbit Hutch. So if you haven't read, pause, go read the first 80 pages, then come back because we're going to talk about what we just read. Before we start that discussion, Katie's going to summarize quickly what happened in this section. I know there was a lot and also not a lot. So good luck with the summary, Katie.
In this first section, we meet the residents of the Rabbit Hutch, which is their fond nickname for the low-income or affordable housing center that they live in Vacaville, Indiana. First up, we meet Blandine. We meet her first. Something is happening to her. I'm assuming this is the act of violence that the summary of this book is referencing. We then go on to meet the mom and baby and her construction job husband. We find out Hope is her name. We meet Ida and Reggie in another apartment in this complex as well. They're an older couple in their 70s. And we meet the person who lives just below Blandine and her roommates, which is Joan. Blandine actually meets Joan at a laundromat, immediately asks her some intimate questions such as, do you believe in the afterlife and in Catholic mystics? Just some casual conversation on your normal Monday night. They have a deep, if 100% one-sided conversation about Catholic women who love misery, and Blandine leaves the scene with a bag of fake blood and animal bones to head to her next stop on her Monday night. We spend some more time with Joan in this section. She is constantly apologetic and trying to be as small as possible. She writes obituaries and monitors comments, including Hope's favorite actor, Elsie Blitz. And then we get to go inside Elsie's head during her final days living. In the final section of this first part of the book, we flash back to Blandine and the boys, which are her three roommates. They all love her. She's wild, 18, bleached white hair. How could you not? They're all fresh out of foster care, trying to be independent, and they're all trying to get Blandine to love them back. I don't know. That's the best I could do.
That was a great summary.
Thank you.
Before you say anything about how you feel about this book, my hypothesis is that this is an Erica book, not a Katie book, because yeah. I am loving it, and I feel like you are like, what the fuck did I just read?
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that hypothesis. I don't even think we need to test it. I can tell you this is an Erica book, not a Katie book. So I'd like to start by discussing this writing style, which I can already tell is going to be the thing that I like about this book. I do want to say, I don't mind a character study book. And sometimes I really like a character study book where it's like very intensely inside their minds. I really liked the beginning of Vladimir for this reason. So I think there's potential for me to like it. I feel like this is going to be a character study into all of these people who are struggling, who are lonely. And I do like being inside their heads. And I think that the prose in the way this book is written is lovely. I think she is an incredibly talented writer. I don't know yet if I'm going to like the plot of this, because like, what is the plot of this? But what did you think about the way that she writes or how it's written in the first section?
I love the writing. I actually think it is a challenging read because you have to read every sentence. It's like every sentence has so much meaning to it. You can't really skim or like read quickly. And that part actually makes it difficult to read. So I think this is a hard book. I get why it could be challenging to keep up with the pace of this read, which is why you don't have to. You can read at your own pace. But I love it. It's like each sentence is very rich. And I like that each chapter is either in a new perspective or it's like a new format. Like, I love that we got to read the obituary and the comments, which felt so like, yes, I'm literally reading this off a website. Like the person who types in all caps, like the person who like doesn't understand what the post is about. Someone who hates it. And then we finally get in the end the comment that should have been removed by one of our characters. So I think that's it's a really engaging book so far, and I like the writing style, although I understand that can be challenging in its own way.
I also liked it. I think this was hard for me because I could not get the book this week and had to read it last night. And I do think it's a challenging read to read quickly because I kept having to go back and reread it and be like, okay, am I missing something? Am I missing a deep thought that I could connect with or understand or whatever? And which is great. I mean, that means she's a super talented writer. I wanted to read every word that she wrote. I feel like it kind of at times read like, and every line I feel like had a ton of imagery to it. Like I felt like I was scrolling a news article or like a news feed the whole time too. It was like being in somebody's overactive mind. I wanted to read this quick excerpt when we're in Blandine's mind and she's this is on page 3. So this is like in the very beginning, but this is I think a good example of this like how every sentence really has meaning. She's describing herself. She says she is no one. She is Katie, the Portuguese water dog who licked her face whenever the Foster family banished them both in the snow. An algorithm for amplified content and a blue slushie from the gas station. The first pair of tap shoes in the feet of a child actress and the man telling her to try harder. She is the smartphone that films her if she bleeds in the floors of her apartment and the chipped nail polish in the teenager who assembled the 90th step of that phone on a green factory floor in Shenzhen, China. And it goes on, but that's like, that is like two sentences of this 3-page monologue of how this girl feels during this assumed assault. Wild. There's so much, so many metaphors, so many like getting you out of your head imagery there. So I do love the way that she writes.
It's so interesting that you say that's your interpretation of what's happening. I think she's dying. I think that's what it means by like she's exiting her body. I think they're sacrificing her. And I think what that chapter is doing is trying to explain the feeling that happens when you die, when your brain is just like dumping all of this serotonin and like trying to help you get through this. And it just feels like that chapter felt like an explosion of experience of somehow I am everything and I'm nothing at the same time.
Yes, and totally.
Yeah, it's super packed with imagery and I loved it because I do think it captures at least what I've heard or what I would imagine those last few moments would feel like.
I agree. I think she is dying in this moment. That's what she means by exiting as well. And I think this is like what's going on in her head. So she's like identifying like I am no one, but I am everyone. I am.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's super powerful. I also do love, against, you know, what I feel like people are going to think I think about this book. I also do love like interconnected big cast stories. I love that in movies. I love that in books. I love like 17 characters who are interconnected. Somebody is like the bank teller and also your mom's best friend. Everyone's interconnected in some ways. And I love to hear all the different perspectives. I think it really gives you a full picture of like the community or in this case, the housing complex that you are living in because you get to see it from so many different points of view. So I like that part.
Before we move on from death, I also want to talk about how death is personified as a character that is meeting Elsie, who is our child actress, who is now dying. And first of all, her obituary is hilarious. The like truly life advice that she gives, so freaking funny. Take a pottery class in the fall. You'll never be short of Christmas presents. I was like, that's a great idea.
I love that too. That I was like, fall. Literally written in my notes in my phone.
But in her absolutely true story on page 44, she talks about how she's trying to explain that, like, death is coming because one day you will die. I promise. Immortality does not care if you believe in it. Iconic. But then in the next paragraph, she's talking about how she just tried to have fun during her life, etc. And at the end, she says, if we're lucky, we are closest to our parents, but they evade us until it's officially over. What we get instead of these comforts is a meet cute with death. He is always early. Oh,
truly, so good. Beautiful writing. So good.
So I am obsessed with the writing. Now we should talk about the plot. I'm obsessed with this kooky little weirdo, Blandine, who, when I say I was absolutely shocked and my jaw hit the floor when it was like, then she picked up her bag with the bones of small animals and blood. I was like, oh, what?
I was like, oh, shit, she is not okay. But then when those blood and animals fell out of the ceiling vents onto the donors' tables who are trying to, like, rip down – I don't know what they're doing. Like, ripping down forest for houses.
They're developing – I think they're developing like, the only park that still exists, and they're going to, like, turn it into condos.
Right. So I don't know if she's mad about that or she's mad about the fact that they're having a wild game dinner where they're, like, eating what they've hunted, which, like – I'm a meat eater, but I still hate when, like, the thought of, like, we are going to talk about it still freaks me out. I mean, I know it makes me not a very good meat eater or conscious one at least, but, like, whatever. that freaks me out. I don't know which one she's protesting, but I cannot believe she pulled that off. And onto their tables fell fake blood made of cocoa powder and bones of small animals. Oh my God. Also,
so
iconic.
Funny. Also that they don't know who did it, can't find her on CCTV because she's probably so small and sort of unassuming. She can sort of like slip in and out. And that they like, there's so many motives for why this could have happened. And the guy's like, come on, 26 like animal bones when there's 26 developers, like obviously it's about us.
Obsessed.
I do think, and again, this is why this is a tough book to read, because it is one line where she says she's mad about the park being gone. So I do think she's upset about them destroying the park. We don't know why, but I think that's right. Her motive for doing this.
Correct. I just don't know if it's because it's like animals' habitat and they're eating the animals, or like if it's truly just like green space that she's mad. Like, I don't know what the point of why she's mad about the park. But yeah, that's what this book is hard to read, because there is so much packed into it. And I feel like at the beginning you said it right when you're like, okay, so much happened. I mean, we have literally, just to summarize, a couple of key points here. We have bones falling from the ceiling. We have her meeting Joan at a laundromat. We have a boy getting a dead fish and bringing it home for her. Another one cooking. Like, we have early childhood trauma of Jack living with exchange students. And we have so many things happening, but also it feels like I'm just inside Blandine's head on this average Monday, seeing what she thinks or what Joan feels or what Elsie thought. And that's the whole plot as well. So it's like everything happened and also nothing happened. So I think it can get, the plot points seem to get lost in the prose a little bit, not for better or for worse, just like, at least for me.
Yeah, I think we're still getting grounded in the characters, and it's not clear what is going to happen, but I think we can safely say we have no fucking clue, because she'll also do these things where it's like, and we all were in love with her. Pause, put a pin in that. We're going to come back to it in like 4 pages about when we all fell in love with her. And at the same time, you're like, wait, what? Why are you guys living together? And then it's revealed like a couple pages later, they were all in foster care together. And then they took this class about how to get an apartment. So it's an interesting way of revealing plot points, but not explaining them, and then explaining it in a couple of pages, which makes you want to keep reading. But whenever these points are revealed, it's like, what the fuck? That's happening too? I think it's a very exciting type of book to read, where it's like, okay, first of all, I love Blandine. I also love all these poor boys who are just like desperate for her love. And she's like, sorry, I'm trying to be a fiance to Jesus and have like a religious experience.
But like, is she, is that actually happening? Is that actually what she wants? Is she just like, I just don't know what's happening with Blandine, but I think she's a wild main character and I'm excited to be inside of her head, because I have no idea what she's going to do next or what's going to happen. At some point, I feel like she's dying, right? But I'm like, and there's also one in there that's like, you know, I don't really know how we started sacrificing animals, but we did. And you're like, wait a minute, what? What? So like, are they sacrificing her? Are they killing rabbits? You don't know what's going to happen. What is this like act of violence that changes the community? Is it them sacrificing Blandine? Is it her accidentally it happening? Is what's happening? I don't know. But I guess that's like the central plot point, and I hope we kind of get to see that from the different people's point of view. I don't know what's going to happen in this book, but I'm not hating it so far. I'm just kind of like, what's happening?
It also has a lot of heart. So one of the – a large part of the book in this first section also is talking about a new mom and like the struggles that she's going through with her new baby and connecting to her baby and her like relationship, which is good and supportive, and a husband who like wants to be there for her, and yet still like she can't really communicate what she's feeling or the depth of those feelings to him. And it's such like an aside almost, but it's so powerful, and it's really going to stay with me, that feeling of like, she's like, I'm afraid of my son's eyes because they're so deep.
Oof, the hauntedness of that. Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be one of those books where we meet a lot of these interesting side characters, like this new mom, and will that be it, or will she come back in and play an important part? Or is it just to give us a sense of the different ways in which people can feel lonely when they're surrounded by other people? And the point of, we're never going to come back to her. Like, I'm interested if she's using these kind of side characters that we meet to kind of set the scene more for her main people, or if it's really going to be like a large cast story and they're going to come back.
I think based on what we've seen so far, all these characters are going to be in a tight little circle, because we have like, oh, that mom, her favorite child actress has died. And then we get to see the child actress and read her obituary. And we know about her son. And her son made the comment that the other neighbor should have deleted. So it does seem like everything in the town, it's a very small town. It's a small world that we're living in. So it's going to be like 10 characters whose lives are intersecting. The other reason I think it's going to come into play is because the young mom and husband are being accused of dropping the mice in the traps onto Roger in his wife's porch. Is that his name, Roger?
Reggie. That is hilarious. And she's like, Reggie, get up from your chair watching evening TV and put that mouse back on their doormat. And he's like,
why do I have to do it?
No, you do it if this is what you want. And she's like, no, like, do one thing for your wife. Like, she's never asked him for anything in the, you know, 50 years they've been married. She's like, just do this for me. He's like, oh, after the news. And you know he's going to do it. The drama is about to begin. I don't know. We'll see.
So funny. Also, like, oh, this couple who were, like, so happy and newlyweds and having sex all the time. And now this baby's crying all the time. It's classic neighbor annoyances.
I also feel like there's a part that's sticking in my head right now when something's happening to Blandine, whatever it is, she's dying in some way. And one of the other neighbors is like, oh, there's a lot of noise coming from down there. They must be having a party. Oh, which just reminds me of like the bystander syndrome. Like you're just the bystander effect. You're like, oh, that couldn't be something I need to like intersect with. And if it was, somebody else would intercede. So it doesn't need to be me or whatever it is. Like he's just like, must be a party. You're like, or somebody's dying and you should check it out. But of course, you know, he's probably not going to. I'm interested to see if more plot or drama comes into this or if we just keep kind of not revealing this last scene till the end and getting kind of inside the characters' heads more.
It is possible that one of the things that is going to be a theme or a metaphor is like the obvious need for help and people ignoring that. I mean, it definitely seems like Blandine is like on the edge of reality and is like very open about that. A couple of people in this book are. They're like just on the edge and they really need help and they're expressing it. And it's very obvious if someone was really paying attention. So maybe that will come back into play.
I think rather than the bystander effect, now that you're kind of talking about it, maybe more what I mean is the fact that people can be so lonely in rooms full of people and be in their own world and kind of like justify what's going on. So like you hear screaming, you are like, oh, my neighbors are having sex again. You put in your earplugs, you move on. You don't assume that somebody is like being assaulted or being sexually assaulted. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like you're just like, especially when you live in such close proximity and community with people, they're messy. I think you just have to like kind of do your own thing. And then I think you end up having really lonely people who know each other so surface level, even when they like share space as intimately as you might in like an apartment complex. You still like don't know each other. You're like strangers, but you also have so much in common. It's like this kind of juxtaposition of both of them. And I think that's Blandine's like, I think we should take each other much more seriously at one point. And it's interesting that we don't really do that.
I love that.
We shall see.
I'm excited. I'm really liking this book.
Me too. I am excited. I'm like interested to read the next section. So that's more than I can say for the last book we read.
Brutal.
Talk. I'll start because I'm reading a terrible book. Just kidding. It's not terrible, but I was walking through Bookloft, you know, buying a couple books I loved and wanted to own that I read this year. And then I saw this book that was like in the sale, like get it now before it's gone. And I was like, oh, I'll pick that up. And it's called The Bookshop of Second Chances. And I do love books about bookshops. It just feels very cozy. And it was like the end of the year. So I was like, okay, I'll read this at a time I don't normally read a lot. So I started it and I'm 380 pages into this book and it's not over. It's like a 500 page book to start the year. And I'm like, why did I do this to myself and not check? And the thing is, the story is okay. About this like newly divorced woman who inherits a house in Scotland, also another place I love reading books about. She goes there to like sort through the house, ends up kind of like working through her like self-actualization journey post-divorce by herself for the first time, meeting friends, finding out who she is. And it's like a sweet story. She ends up, you know, like meeting this whole community of people. You can probably guess what happens from there. But like I do like the story, except for that, like, it's taking such a long time, and we could have literally cut out 200 pages, written this whole book in 280 pages, and I probably would have loved it. And now I'm just, like, committed to having to finish it because I read 380 pages of this book. I'm not giving that up. God, it's January
8th. I hate when that happens.
Ugh. Yeah, so now I got to speed read some books this year.
Yeah, we will. We will. Don't worry about it.
Thank you for that encouragement. We did both meet our reading goals, though, which is exciting.
We did. I read more books last year than I've ever read before.
Me too. By far.
It's very exciting. So I feel like there's always, you just, like, don't think about those, like, weeks where you're on vacation and you burn through a bunch of books, or you read, right, like, you pick up one book that you can't put down. I say we probably read, like, 5 or 6 books a year that are, like, I'm obsessed with this book. I read it cover to cover in, like, a day. Yeah. That helps.
Yeah, like, I read Carrie Soto in literally 24 hours. I'm like, okay, useful.
There will be books like that. I read 2 books at the end of 2022 that I was okay with. They were fine. I read Malibu Rising, which is a Taylor Jenkins Reid book. It was good. It was not as good as Carrie Soto, but she wrote this before that. But it was fun to read because Carrie is part of that book, which is really funny. And it's like a family story. It's about, like, marriage and divorce and broken families. And they're all surfers, which I just love surfing. So it was a nice, like, way to end a cold December, is like imagining living in Malibu and surfing all the time. So it was fine. It was enjoyable. That's all I have to say about that. I'm giving it, like, a 4 out of 5. Then I read this book called Lucy by the Sea, which is by Elizabeth Strout. I don't remember why I read it. It was randomly one of those books I just, like, added to my Christmas list and someone bought for me. It was a book, sounds like it was about the author's experience living through COVID. She is divorced and widowed, living in Manhattan, and then COVID starts, and her ex-husband, who is the father of her 2 daughters, basically picks her up and says, we're moving to Maine. This is about to get really bad. So they move to a small house in Maine, and they basically live through COVID there. And it's just, like, straightforwardly, like, COVID happens. Donald Trump is president. Donald Trump's not president. The Black Lives Matter protests happened over the summer. It's just like, yes, I lived through it. I don't really need to read about it.
Oh, I don't think I need to. I feel like I'm still processing all of that happening. Like, I don't need to read back through that, especially in such detail, from a perspective that I could have had, or is similar to the one that I have.
It was like, also, I live in New York City. It's like, this is all just, like, way too much of my exact experience and not abstracted away to, like, get anything out of it.
Right.
So it was not my favorite.
That's fair.
That's just what I'll say. The book I'm reading now is Hysterical, and it was a book I thought about potentially being a book talk book, and I'm so glad I didn't, because you would have fucking killed me. It's called Manhunt, and it is a dystopian future where testosterone, and anyone who has a certain level of testosterone, literally poisons you from the inside out. You turn into sort of like a zombie, kind of terrifying creature. So that includes most of the cis men, if not all of them, unless they're on specific hormone blockers for whatever reason. So the only people who are really, like, left, who are normal, who are trying to, like, fight back against these, like, ravenous bands of men, are cis women, trans women who are on hormones, again, or trans men who are also not taking the testosterone that they wanted to take. So it's sort of like Walking Dead, but everyone is, the main characters are trans. And then there's these, like, rabid militant TERFs who are trying to, like, kill all of the trans people and kill all the men and, like, take control of all the cities. It is wild. It's so fun. It's so crazy. It's very gruesome, so I feel like you would hate it. And it's very, like, there's a lot of sex, so I also feel like you would be like, I'm uncomfortable for that we're making our readers read this, or we'd have to, like, discuss it every week. But I'm really enjoying it. It's very, very, very fun, and painful and raunchy and horny. It's like it imagines like the world is ending, but everybody's still horny for each other, which is very funny because I don't know if that would happen, but probably. It's fun to imagine. They're also all still like smoking weed, and it's just funny. I think it is like we've talked about this before. It's fun to read about books where like shit is hitting the fan and society is dissolving around you and people are still people. Like people are still people. They're still going to fuck. They're still going to get high. Yeah. And at some point things are sort of going to stabilize where like, okay, yes, there's like an active war going on, but also I really want to date my coworker and I don't want to make her uncomfortable. And so how do we do that? Like those things still happen.
I feel like I was reading something about Ukraine the other day about that. Like people in the midst of all this like horror and all of the like how bad it is, like babies are still being born. People are still falling in love. People are still flirting with somebody at the bakery, like whatever it is. Like it's life is people are still peopling no matter what's going on, which is like beautiful in the face of such like tragedy.
Oh, nice.
I know. I'm really here at the philosophical moments these days.
I love it.
Annoying even myself.
We're feeling all our feelings.
Disgusting.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.